Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. So on a beautiful moonlit night here in the broadcast bunker, it is time to talk about disaffection and disgust with the everyday news cycle and how on earth a person is to talk about politics these days. Whether it's Roseanne and her Ambien or some crazy thing that the president said or anything else, what is actually going on? We're going to talk about it in podcast 726. Well, as you know, I'm working with the Water Butler, which is an amazing system for purifying your tap water. And as I've been saying, I do not drink the tap water in my town. For one thing, it's the taste. And then you have the possible pollution from decades ago. I said in the last podcast, I talked about how the city where I live sent out this pamphlet that described all the horrible things that are in the water. And up to and including the horrible things that are in the water because of toxic waste from, 50 years ago. There are toxins that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless. And yes, I spend a lot of money on bottled water. I make coffee with bottled water because I refuse to use the tap water. Frankly, the tap water doesn't taste very good. And if you live in, any of these towns around here where I live, St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, Minnetonka, and I'm sure there are other places, the tap water doesn't taste very good. If you try to make coffee with it, it's not very good. So I always use purified or quote-unquote bottled water, which is a whole other thing. Don't even get me started about bottled water, because bottled water may not necessarily be any less toxic. It just tastes, quote-unquote, tastes better. Well, I'm going to talk about Water Butler because it's important, because my friend Joe was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. And the thing is, it's affordable, especially if you consider how much you're spending. And if you're a family, you're probably spending a lot more on bottled water than even if you're getting the big gallon jugs than the average person that actually has a water purification system. So I'm going to give you a website. This is going to change, but check out masterplumbermn.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Water Butler, those guys can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever, and you can maintain it for pennies day to day, actually, because after they put it in, all you got to do is change the filters once a year. Call 763-286-8328. That's 763-286-8328. 763-286-8328. Time to purify your water right now from the source with the Water Butler. They have 68 years of experience with plumbing, 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328. 763-286-8328. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. You can also enter masterplumbermn.com. End your dependence on bottled water today. Well, it is late at night and actually early in the morning. So this is Tuesday night, Wednesday morning in podcast time. And on Wednesday mornings, I go to a business meeting at 7 a.m. Now, being a nocturnal person, that requires me to pretty much stay up all night, which I do most of the time anyway. And I've been struggling with this because my schedule is so weird through the week, because I have this what I call turnaround that happens on Wednesday, which is that I stay up all night Tuesday night and then go to the meeting. By the time the meeting's over, I come home, I'm ready to just pass out, and then I sleep all day, and I have to start all the way back. So my Thursdays are weird, and the good news is this meeting forces me to do business and sales and work on my business. So I'm loving it and loving the association. So more about that later. But it is, almost 4 o'clock in podcast time on Wednesday morning. And I was able to, Tuesday nights to deal with it. I go out with my friends on Tuesday night. We eat Vietnamese rice stick soup and yell at each other and give each other a hard time. And we were really upset because the Starbucks was closed because of diversity training. Because usually we go to the faux place, and then we go to Starbucks and we drink coffee and we sit up and we argue with each other. And we weren't able to do that tonight. So we kind of truncated the evening. And I was lucky because I came home and was able to sleep for 4 or 5 hours. And I got up at midnight and I thought, I got to bang on a podcast because we're getting towards the end of the month. And I haven't done a podcast on politics and society recently, and I find myself in a difficult situation of wanting to do some kind of commentary on society and politics, but really wishing I could do another yoga podcast, which, by the way, I could do if I really wanted to, because it is much easier to talk about black seed oil and diets and doing too much yoga and everything else. And the biggest problem with the fluidity of the news flow, so to speak, these days, if you can call it news, is the conflicting messages and confusion and efforts to determine on a beautiful summer night, which is not summer yet. It feels like the summer doldrums, but we're not in the summer doldrums, of having to spend a lot of time to vet news sources and find the thing to talk about. Now, in podcast media, it's different from broadcast media because what the broadcasters do is they talk about the same stuff over and over again, and they never get out of it. They just keep talking about the same stuff because you have to work with what's available. With podcasts, I don't like to do that. I think it's a waste of podcast space. I don't think people want to tune it in. I think people are looking for something a little bit more in-depth in terms of content from podcasts to make them think. So I'm going to make you think. Hopefully, in this podcast, because I'm going to tell you a personal story about, you know, from my personal point of view, why this is so hard to do these days if you're commenting on politics. You know, if you're doing a podcast about motorcycles, if you're doing a podcast about sports, or if you're doing a podcast about music or something, you can work in political talk, but you're not doing podcasts about that. When you do society and politics, you got to do society and politics, except the problem is I don't really have any interest in society and politics. Certainly, I still have a lot of interest in society, but the political thing is ridiculous because of the news flow. And here's some examples. I don't call this news because this is what happens. We're having a trade war. No, wait, we're not having a trade war. Wait a minute, it's back on. We're making a deal with the North Koreans. No, we're not. Oh, wait, maybe it's back on. The Mueller investigation is nearing a climax. Oh, no, wait a second. It might be weeks before we know anything. There's a counter investigation based on the idea that the FBI placed a mole in the Trump's campaign. No, wait a minute. That's a conspiracy theory. That's not true. Roseanne's new comedy is a hit. Oops, due to Ambien problems, the show's been canceled. Yeah, she took Ambien and tweeted. So they canceled the show because she said some stuff, quote unquote, she shouldn't have said. Now, this is what goes on and passes for news. And of course, every screaming headline, every event that really isn't an event. The Roseanne thing's a great example. She didn't go to Valerie Jarrett and say something to Valerie Jarrett's face. She didn't ruin some diplomatic meeting somewhere. She just tweeted something out, and now that's a huge news story. So every screaming headline is accompanied by analysis, predictions, counter-analysis, reviews of what happened and wherever, and of course, commentary upon commentary upon commentary, lamenting the end of the free world and all that is dear, or commentary telling us why this is a good thing and it's about time it happened and we needed to have this happen and everything else. It's not a kid down a well. It's not an earthquake. It's not a war. It's some woman who's in her 60s who said something stupid because she was high on Ambien in the middle of the night. To me, it feels, and I have to say it feels, because we are constantly told to put our feelings on hold unless those feelings serve political correctness, it feels like this is building to something, and I don't even know if that's a construct. Sometimes it feels like people are going crazy. I wonder if we're all going crazy, all of us in the Western world, where we really don't have anything to worry about. We've got plenty to eat and plenty. We got coffee. We've got, you know, most of us have some food in the, you know, in the cabinets. But it feels like people are going crazy. Traffic is nuts. People seem like they can't cope. Shopping is really something. If you go to the store, people seem disconnected and confused, separated from reality. Maybe it's the Ambien. Maybe it's the antidepressants. Maybe it's that beautiful full moon out there. But I've been doing this a long time, and I don't think I have ever seen the quote-unquote news situation, such as it is, as bad as it is right now, where we are reacting to things that really aren't even real. They're just things that happen online. How can I define this for future generations? How would I? So if someone came to you from the future and said, what were you thinking? What would you say? Do I say our time was defined by either an intense hatred of the sitting president and all that writing and commentary and political action was calculated based on that bias, or by an intense feeling people have that they are being passed over, ignored, that a culture is being destroyed, that you can't speak your mind, you can't even think the things that you're thinking? Is it justified? Well, right or left, how would you know? Do you know? Do I know? You know, it's all being fought out in cyberspace, which doesn't really exist, except it does, because cyberspace is typified by intense emotions, which get people very upset. Social media, Twitter, which doesn't seem to be good for anything other than getting your TV show canceled with a drunken or Ambien-induced midnight tweet, calling people's names or silly handles, and the same for Facebook, which is nothing but political rants from your friends or attempts to get attention or sympathy or something else. And most of the rants now are left-wing because the right-wing rants are being suppressed on Facebook because Mark Zuckerberg had to testify in front of Congress because the Russians were that. I mean, it's just, it's a website where people say stupid things. And yet it seems, am I crazy? It's upside down that this thing, these things have this much power is really silly and evidence of a culture that really doesn't know what's important. There is a storyline which creates a flow, a current, which then everything runs with until the storyline is no longer operational. Then a new storyline is established. That's the way it works. This is not journalism. The storyline comes from social media or from something that happens, and they keep recycling old shows, old ideas. Mary Kay Letourneau, the child abusing teacher, is now going to have a show on Netflix, which I'm going to watch. Or maybe it's A&E. It's a documentary where we're going to find out what happened to her. Is this journalism? To me, it's just propaganda. It's either, taking pleasure in someone else's pain and suffering, or it is reacting to emotional stimuli designed to get you to think this, that, or the other thing. I really don't think the executives, the reporters, the presenters, the producers even know this is propaganda, specifically misinformation. I don't even know if it has a source, but it exists, and this is what drives the conversation. As you know, I do not support President Trump, but not because of the reasons people might assume. I do not support him for some of the same reasons I didn't support President Obama. I didn't agree with President Obama or the Democrats politically because I don't believe in expanding the government or viewing the government, especially one as large and as overbearing as our government, as a solution to anything. Generally speaking, I do not agree with President Trump's policies or ideas, if you can figure out what those policies and ideas actually are. I didn't support the tax bill. And if you want to know why, you can listen to the podcast where I read the tax bill. I don't believe in trade protection. I don't think spending more money for infrastructure in the United States or the military or anything right now, when the country is $20 trillion in debt and adding trillions every year to that debt is a good idea. I don't agree with the generally moderate Republicans who favor marginal changes and explain away meandering toward more government and government solutions and less freedom. But what happens if after all of this criticism in the media for Trump, he's stupid, he's a child, he's crazy, he's antichrist, he's this or that, even the stuff that seems to stick to the truth, like he's erratic and emotional, he fires people, he careens back and forth on policy decisions, like the trade stuff. And by the way, keeping in mind, he's only the president. It's a government in which the House and Senate are very powerful, and a government in which the Supreme Court and the court system remains powerful, as well as the state governments remaining powerful. So considering all of that, what happens if he actually succeeds in some of these areas that foundered the Bush presidency and that the Obama presidency tried and failed to change with, quote unquote, new ideas about foreign policy, which really were just cobbled together ideas from different, foreign policy schools and old ideas, in other words, Keynesian, about economic growth. You know, Trump is just as much of a Keynesian as Obama, if the truth be told, which is why I can't stand either one of them. What if marginal changes passed by a moderate Congress produce marginal improvements like less regulation, higher revenues, and improved business climate? Now, I'm not saying those things are happening. I'm just asking what if, because no one else is. There is a mountainous storyline that says Donald Trump is a failed president, that he will lose the House and the Senate in a once-in-a-generation Democratic wave, that he will be immediately impeached when the Democrat majority takes office in January of 2019. What if that storyline turns out to, and the best way to say this actually is, what if that storyline turns out to not be the storyline because it isn't the truth? Don't even get me started about the issues with trade protection, because that changes day to day. You know, he was going to get rid of NAFTA, and now they're saying he can't get rid of NAFTA because they've screwed up the negotiations. He was going to first impose sanctions with China and then not impose sanctions with China. Now I just read a story that he says that they're back. In the news these days, with all the talk about foreign manufacturing with President Trump, the fact is that he leans toward trade protection because he believes somehow that those countries are going to box up all the jobs that left the United States in the 80s and send them back. And the fact is that if you're a company that manufactures overseas, you got to get ready for it and you got to start thinking about reshoring. And so you are probably looking for manufacturing companies that can handle the load. And that's where DepoStar comes in. American design, engineering, and manufacturing. They do aeronautic devices. They do medical devices. They do standard manufacturing. They have designers. They are on it and they're great. DepoStar, D-E-P-O-T. Check them out online at DepoStar.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at the Bob Davis podcast.com, DepoStar, DepoStar.com. Now, I don't have to prove any of this because I'm not making the case that the alternate storyline is true or that any of the storylines are true. And you'll find out why in a second when I talk about how this stuff is covered. But if you ask what if, well, then you have an interesting scenario developing. And I think more of us should say, what if the general trend of thought is wrong, and what they think is going to happen doesn't happen. And I'll give you a great example. So I did the House and Senate race analysis more than a month ago. They were not popular podcasts because they were droners, in which I went through every single so-called toss-up race for the Senate and the House in the midterms in 2018. And I said at the end of those podcasts that there was no evidence of a Democrat wave building across the country, even in some of the so-called toss-up races. At that time, this was the dominant storyline in all the political coverage. It was a fait accompli that the Democrats were going to sweep all these vulnerable Republicans, especially in the House, and that the momentum would carry the Democrats to historic victory and majorities, at least in the House, if not the Senate. Suddenly, all the analysts are saying, wait a minute, hold on. There's no evidence of a Democrat wave building. There's certainly an opportunity, and that's the hopeful part. Well, guess what? There's always an opportunity in politics to win a race or to unseat an incumbent or upset or whatever you want to call it. Those opportunities always exist. And when you're talking about 435 House races and one-third of the U.S. Senate and governor's races and everything else, there's all kinds of opportunities. And every race affects every other race. Without getting into it too deeply, the Missouri governor just resigned because he's a crook. And, you know, that could cause all kinds of problems with the idea that Claire McCaskill, the Missouri Democrat senator, was going to be unseated, and that was an open race. And, you know, everything affects everything else at that level. So there's always opportunities for upsets. But I don't understand why these analysts couldn't do what I did, which the information is available to everyone. I'm not unique. I'm not smarter than the average bear or anything else. I just went through and looked at all the races and added up the numbers and said, I'm not seeing this. Maybe there's something wrong. Suddenly, they're all saying it. I talk to my son, especially in the middle of the night, because he also works the overnight shift. And when he gets off work, we talk at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and we review the news of the day. And I had a big argument with him the other night, because I was asserting that the Democratic Party, for all the things it does right when it comes to campaigning, does not seem to have a cogent plan for the future of the country and an agenda that it wishes to enact once it wins Congress. What it has is fervor and emotion and anger and support for the dominant storyline, the mountain of commentary which says Trump is an autocrat, Trump is stupid, Trump is crazy, Trump is a xenophobe, Trump is a racist, we must resist, 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 he was elected, Russians, Trump, 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 bad, 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 and on and on and on. Protest, protest, protest. That's their plan, apparently. And if the plan, if there is a plan, is guaranteed minimum income, single-payer health, increasing funding for social services, free college education, guaranteed jobs, higher minimum wages, correcting the evils of racism with reverse racism, and so on, free college and everything else, those are really impossible. And no reasonable member of Congress can vote for those things, because if they haven't already bankrupted the country, they will bankrupt the country to do those things. They're just not possible. Governments can't offer those things without strings. And the strings come with surveillance and control and the lack of freedom. Those are you know, that's just part of the deal when you support those things. I don't think that, well, let's put it this way. I can tell you that while that may fly with the elites in the big cities that wear the $250 shirts and the $500 shoes, when you go to Washington, D.C. and you see how these people are dressed, it's amazing. It may work with the disaffected lower classes in the parts of town that those white-shirted elites do not go to. The rich, beautiful women in Washington, D.C. at the Starbucks do not go to Anacostia or Oxon Hill, Maryland, right? They don't go to 63rd and Woodlawn in Chicago. They pretty much stay downtown in their beautiful glass buildings. Those people do not want to go to those places. Those people that live in those places, some of the stuff that's being offered might actually be something that they'd be interested in. But I can tell you that that agenda is not going to fly with the much larger majorities in the United States in medium-sized towns and cities and suburbia and exurbia, where more and more people are moving every day. If you doubt me, take a trip to the Southeast Metro, the Southwest Metro, and particularly the North Metro, where people are having to go further and further out to find affordable homes, young families, because they don't want to live in a condominium in a close-in suburb or a crappy old house in a ghetto to raise their children to send to a bad public school. And I could go on and on and on with stuff. Those plans and those ideas aren't going to fly with those people who can barely afford to pay $3 for a gallon of gasoline, and they're certainly not going to live someplace in a, you know, beautiful new condominium that was built with the subsidies for tax dollars at the corner of What's It and Hoodoo, where they can pay $17 for French fries and a beer at the Tony Bar at the bottom of the big condominium. You know, they're going to move to, you know, Rogers, or they're going to move to St. Bonifacius if they can afford it. And believe it or not, those things on that agenda probably will not fly with millennials who are on their first or second job getting paid minimum wage to monitor social media or work in some hospital's IT department or on an accounts staff at some PR agency. The truth of the matter, though, in spite of all that, is we're not talking about issues or ideas because we're caught up in this dream world, this delusion that everything the president does is right or horribly and terribly wrong. And isn't it a shame? And I just wonder what CNN is going to say if their storyline doesn't play out with the midterms in November. They're going to say it was rigged. How do you rig 435 House races and, you know, half of a third of the Senate and governor's races and, you know, state legislatures races and everything else? What is Fox News going to say if a Democrat wave does emerge in these close races? Are they going to shudder and weep and lament the passing of the great republic? And see, I have gone too far already in this podcast for this analysis, too, because now it becomes almost as though it's partisan. It's not meant partisan. The only partisanship is the idea that the government's too big. The only partisanship is the absolute disgust with the media. And it feels like it's building to something, some kind of crisis. And I feel, and I'm going to say I feel, that I see it in people's actions, their moods. It's in the vibe. You can see it on the freeway. There's a lot of aggression lately. I've certainly been aggressive. This is not a good place for the United States as a whole. I'm not saying we're doomed. I'm not saying Jesus is coming back or that the event is going to happen or that the volcano in Hawaii is just the beginning or that planet Nibiru is coming in and it's going to hit the Earth, although maybe that's true, or that the Illuminati is going to take over using their mind-controlled sex slave as soldiers or that robots and AI are going to destroy us all unexpectedly. But I have been around long enough to be able to feel something is in the air. Part of it is an increasing feeling that the government is disconnected from serving the people. I feel that there is a sense of powerlessness, even with people I know that support the government, both Republican and Democrat. They feel that their voices are not being heard. And I feel like the truth is that the people in this country are powerful, especially the people who are silent and don't participate. They tend to be the most powerful because you don't know what they're thinking. And the truth is most of the people who are silent have a lot to say, and every now and then they say it. And as I have been saying myself, if you're on the wrong side of whatever they say, well, you don't want to be there. And this is exactly what happened in the 2016 presidential race. Hillary Clinton was on the wrong side of the fence, and it was just enough for Donald Trump to win the presidency. And no one can figure out how it happened. It happened because there's a whole bunch of disaffected people that no one's listening to, and they're not paying attention to them. And some of them are Democrats, and they live in places like Minnesota's 8th District and Milwaukee and Wisconsin and, you know, out west and in Iowa and places like that. They don't live in the middle of New York City or Washington, D.C., where all the elites are. They don't ride the metro. You know, they drive 16 miles to some plant somewhere and bang out something 14 hours a day and come home exhausted. And that's the – or they work in an office and they come home exhausted. And, you know, sometimes I would imagine that some of those lives, as I said when I traveled, some of those places are really nice. Some of those little towns are really nice to live in. But those people no one listens to or pays any attention to, and that's because the media is too busy following these stupid storylines. And I do blame the media, mostly the failing business models of traditional journalistic channels, whether it's newspapers, television, or broadcast radio. They've hollowed out their journalists' staff. They've hollowed out their production staff. They've hollowed out their talent. They don't pay anybody anything anymore, so they're not getting quality people. But even what used to be known as new media, the cable news channels, for example, are also at the root of the problem. And then you have the constellation of digital media sites supposedly dedicated to quote-unquote news and truth, but you end up having to vet those. And that's why you end up sitting up all night trying to figure out what's going on, because every story you have to vet the writer, you have to vet the site to understand why they're saying what they're saying, and then you have to decide whether you're going to say, okay, this is valid, this is a valid point or not. Why is this? And this is what I told you I'd talk about, you know, not too long ago. It's easier to write about Roseanne's tweets than it is to cover the civil war in Syria. Let's face it. It's easier. And by the way, people care more about Roseanne's tweets than they do about the dead children in Syria. That's the fact and the hard fact of the matter. It's easier to get quotes from urban intellectuals about Trump's narcissistic tendencies and couple those with man on the street about how bad things are than it is to cover the actual economic effects of the tax bill so far. Or ask why we only have 2.3% gross domestic product growth in the fourth quarter, or do a report on how most of the increase in retail sales is actually an increase in the price of gasoline at the retail pump. It's easier to tout the latest tweet from the president or the press secretary's statements to some foolish reporter at the Daily Press Briefing comedy show, which, by the way, is actually better than if you just watch it, you know, on the whitehouse.gov. It's more entertaining than the actual Saturday Night Live parodies, which says something about where their heads are at. It's easier to do all of that than it is to actually delve into details. It's easier to get a quote from Elon Musk or Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is the latest puppet that talks about science, than it is to actually find some better sources from MIT or Caltech or Stanford to explain what artificial intelligence does, how it works, and so forth. Just call up Bill Gates' PR person and get a quote, or better yet, pull a quote from a dead guy from Google, and let's get some YouTube video and some Facebook video and throw that up there. Here's, you know, Stephen Hawking, you know, all curled up in his chair, you know, talking about the end of the world. So no, we're not dealing in absolutes because there aren't any. We're not dealing with facts because nobody knows what those are or how to find them because we've fired all the people that could go to Syria and actually report. So what you have is you have people who have the balls to go into those places and report on stuff rather than news agencies like NBC or CNN or the Washington Post or someplace like that with reporters and reporting assets in places like Cairo and, you know, I don't know, Jerusalem or even better, Damascus. So we're dealing with a dreamland where reality is the same as drama, where a governor and an attorney general in 1 year resigned because of actually acting out dark sexual fantasies, aside from the normal everyday run-of-the-mill graft and corruption where Hollywood's, you know, scions of entertainment are being hauled in through a perp walk so that they can be, you know, persecuted for, you know, whatever is said, alleged that they've done. You have stories like my favorite this week where I live. The Super Bowl committee in Minneapolis has announced that nearly $400 million has been received in revenue from the Super Bowl, but they didn't announce that it probably over $1 trillion of subsidies and costs, actually over $1 billion in costs and subsidies to the taxpayer were spent to actually get the Super Bowl in the first place. And they don't spend too much time reporting that the retailers say, well, they may have spent the money, but then it comes down to what our costs costs actually are, which is a whole thing about business that people don't understand. Just because you get the money in the cash register doesn't mean that you've paid your costs. All the systems that we have employed over the last 50 or so years to know some semblance of the truth are failing, or they have failed because people think, you have to go to Alex Jones for the truth, which is, not the truth. It isn't the left. It isn't the right. It isn't shows on cable. It isn't Alex Jones even. It isn't licentious behavior by Beyonce or whatever her name is, Sasha Fierce, whatever her Illuminati name is. The money isn't worth anything today. We've deflated the currency. We've inflated the currency to the degree that that's probably the biggest problem that we have in our society. And the other part of it is that politicians and people on these interlocking councils who are appointed to really control things that aren't elected and work in the shadows, the Fed, the Met Council, et cetera, these things, these people, they say one thing and they do another. And what they say is designed to obscure what they do. They say failure is success. They lie. And yes, they do. They all lie. And they keep lying day in and day out through their teeth. And they justify it by saying this is what we have to say to get the story out. They aren't even loyal to their own parties and supporters. Government systems actually are not working very well, and they are failing spectacularly, and they have been for some time. I think, President Obama was very good at putting Band-Aids across it and acting as though they were very competent and on top of things, but most of the time, most of the problems that we have in the society are left to the cops to deal with, to fire departments to deal with, and the doctors in the emergency room or the paramedics to do something, actually something, anything about anything that we have, whether it's the opioid crisis or something else. And all our media covers the Roseanne Barr story or the NFL kneeling story, by the way, a company which enjoys tax-free status, which I've never been able to figure out, or whatever fresh hell has come down the pike from Hollywood with tweets or some other human failing, which we seem to enjoy with glee, or Washington or New York or some other silly thing the president or someone who works for him has done, or some horrible statement that someone's made about somebody else that in 50 years won't make any difference. So talking about politics and advancing the story among this thicket of confusion becomes very, very difficult to make decisions about whether to cover a story, not cover a story, do an interview, talk to a congressman or a senator when they're just going to tout whatever the storyline is and so forth, or to just say, here's what I think's going on. This is very difficult to be able to do this stuff and advance the story in a podcast format where, you don't have to talk about the same thing every day. I don't have to do this podcast again because it's up there and done. I don't have to do the Senate race podcast or the House race podcast again because it's up there, and it'll be up there for the next 10 years probably. So to talk about an issue or not until there is some resolution is very difficult if you don't want to be like all the other losers. So what I spend a lot of time with is watching stuff and thinking, well, this has got to lead up to something at some point. I don't know what it is, which is why the doldrums of summer, especially when it's not summer yet, is absolute bliss. The green, the warmth, the moon, the warm air, even the rain and the storms is welcome because it helps ease the pain of dealing with the insanity. All right. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcasts on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play, a bunch of these syndication services. You can subscribe at iTunes. You can subscribe at Stitcher.com or TuneIn if you have an Android device. I do appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, such as they are. Twitter, a cesspool. What I call it, Twitter, the cesspool that Twitter has become and the cesspool Facebook is becoming, but really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favorites, because that's how we get the word out. And I also appreciate donations for diesel fuel for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 726. Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come, little baby. There's my feet, they lost that soul. Once I'm big and you save a little soul. Yes, go. Come, little baby. Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings. And you looked into